Yeah.
Record.
Nah, you're
and
okay.
We're good.
Sorry.
Nah, you're fine. Hey, what's going on, guys?
Should I get another one?
You can take Brandon's.
Easy.
Nah, I'm just kidding. Episode 9, Sunday Sit Down. We have a special guest today, Eric Berger. What's going on, man? How do you feel?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good. So this would be the point that we typically open the can.
Which I beat you to it already.
Yeah. Off the gun.
Cheers.
Oh, I beat you guys to it too.
All right. So right here we have the owner of the Pit, Jacks Beach.
We shouted you out a few times in previous videos too. I know you haven't seen it, but we had Jake on too. We kind of like shouted you out. Thanks for having us at the Pit, like all the stuff. We appreciate you.
Sure.
Yeah. We never expected you to actually see it, but now that you're here, we can tell you about it.
I'll be forced to watch future episodes.
Yeah, you have to now.
All right, so the first thing we're talking about, we kind of have you just introduce yourself, kind of tell us about your background, like what you do now, just kind of general idea.
Oh, man.
Yeah. We know it's a lot. That's why.
Yeah. How long is the episode?
About an hour or so.
I might as well grab me a beer real quick.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm old, so I'll try to make it quick. Graduated from college, went to work for a marketing firm in Philadelphia for a short period of time, and hated that. That was back in the early 90s before the Clean Indoor Air Acts, and I was working in a little cubicle office with 7-foot ceilings, and everybody in the office building smoked. And about 6-7 months of that, I took my one lung that was remaining and went home, and ended up actually going to Florida for a vacation with a little bit of money that I had saved up. And that vacation ended up lasting about 6 years.
It's a long vacation.
Yeah.
And Florida would do that to you.
Yeah. And went down there and found a Gold's Gym that I was working out at, and was there for probably about 3 months, and was going to the gym a couple times a day and hanging out at the beach the rest of the time. And
yeah, that sounds awesome.
It was great. And then I got to know everybody at the gym, and the owner of the gym, I got to be friends with him, and he said, Eric, he goes, what is it that you do? He said, you're in here all the time. He said, working out. And I said, well, not a whole lot. I work out a couple times a day and hang out at the beach, play a little bit of volleyball. And he's like, well, how the hell old are you?
Yeah.
And I think it was 23 at the time, 24. And he's like, how do you do that? I go, well, I'm not going to be able to do it a whole lot longer. I said, because I'm running out of money.
Yeah.
And, long and short of it was he asked what I was doing. And I was basically in sales up in Philadelphia. And he said, we were selling inline water filtration systems to mainly like builders and stuff. And he's like, man, he goes, if you can sell water filters, you can sell gym memberships. He said, why don't you work for me? And so that's how I started in the fitness industry. And did that from probably 92 to 96, and then moved to Columbus, Ohio, back to Columbus, Ohio. I'm from Ohio originally. In 96, opened up a powerhouse gym, full-size facility. It was like a 20,000 square foot powerhouse gym, real similar to the Bailey's at the beach. Full service, childcare, aerobics, tanning, spinning, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
And had that from 96 to 2001, and was very similar to the gyms that I worked at, in South Florida when I started with the Gold's Gyms. And sold that in 2001, and just I said if I ever did anything again, it would be nothing like that. You know what I mean? Because I said I would eliminate all the headaches, which is your aerobics, your spinning, your tanning, your childcare. Yeah. And
I mean, I would love a tanning booth.
Massage chairs and pizza on Friday nights.
And that's all you can talk to me.
So. I was 14 when I started out working out in my first gym.
Yeah.
And the place was called the Body Shack in Dover, Ohio. A guy by the name of Ed Quillen owned the gym. And So I was 14, and it was about 40 minutes away from where I lived, where I grew up. And but it was the only, it was, I lived in a real remote Amish community, and it was the close, it was the only place to go to do anything. So my parents would go like a couple times a week and do their grocery shopping and any shopping or movies or anything. Yeah. Like movie theaters was all in Dover, about 40 minutes away from where I grew up. And so every time I, my mom would go into town or my dad would go into town, I'd have them drop me off at the Body Shack. Yeah. And I'd pester the piss out of Ed to get me to let him join the gym. And he's like, no, man. He goes, I told you. He said, I've told you like 1,000 times. He goes, you got to be 16. And he said, before you can join, he said, then your parents have to, you know, sign this waiver. And so, I mean, and probably for about 6 months, you know, I would just go in and, you know, sit on the couch and just BS with Ed. And he was a retired bodybuilder, and that was, and at the time, this was like early to mid 80s. They didn't even allow women to work out at the gym, which was pretty bizarre. Yeah. Really? Like you could,
That's a huge change.
Oh yeah. 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 I mean, like there was no, there wasn't even an option.
Oh shit.
Wow.
And,
I didn't know about that.
Yeah. I didn't know.
Yeah. And then it's crazy when you think about it now.
Yeah.
And then after this was probably by the time I joined, probably like late 80s, then they had started allowing women to come in after hours. Like they would give them keys and they could come in, but they weren't allowed to train with the guys.
Really?
So it was, yeah, it was crazy.
Was this like all gyms or like the more like private ones?
Probably. I don't know, to be honest with you, but I'm sure it was specific to the Body Shack because it was a pretty hardcore, you know, place to train. But anyway, so finally, after pestering Ed for months, you know, on end, he said, he goes, I tell you what, man. He said, why don't, he said, you had your mom drop you off. He said, here tomorrow. He said, after school. And, he said, I'm going to put you through a workout. And he said, I'll make my decision at that point. He said, if I'm going to let you join. Like I said, I was 14.
Yeah.
And they didn't allow anybody under the age of 16. And there wasn't a whole lot of teenagers in there. And so I went back the next day and, you know, I didn't know. I mean, I trained and worked out for, you know, sports and stuff and kind of was doing my own thing and reading as much as I could. But we trained arms. We trained biceps and triceps and literally trained for almost 2.5 hours.
Oh, shit.
I can't imagine the biceps and triceps.
Yeah, no, me neither.
I know for 7 minutes. I know for 7 minutes I'm a huge pump ever. Yeah.
And I had no idea, you know, I mean, I was just like, oh, this must be like a bodybuilder's train, you know?
Yeah.
And, the dude just freaking annihilated me. And I don't know, we did, you know, 30 plus sets for like each biceps and triceps. And, after we were, you know, at it for about 2.5 hours, Ed was like, all right, man. He's like, that's it. He goes, a couple things. He goes, one, he goes, you will never train like that again. He goes, number two, he goes, I was just trying to get you to quit. He said, I couldn't get you to quit. He said, so you can join. So I was the first 14-year-old that ever joined the Body Shack at, back then. So, it was just a hardcore old school, you know, place to train. You know, it was dirty and
that grit.
Like, biggest guys, strongest guys, you know, bodybuilders, powerlifters, all trained at the shack, you know, at the Body Shack. So, anyway, when I sold my gym in 2001, my powerhouse gym, I said, if I ever did anything again, it would be that, you know, not something that. Just for the love of the iron game, you know, I was like, I wouldn't want to, you know, I would do it without it having to basically be a sole source of income for me, you know, and just, you know, put something together that kind of, you know, resonated my roots, you know, per se. So, so that's kind of how the pit.
That's an awesome, I know we're kind of jumping the gun there, but that's going to be an awesome story to kind of go into the pit too. So like this, after the gym too, what kind of brought you back to Florida?
So basically the weather.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Both my children were born in Ohio, in Columbus, where we had the gym. Brooke was born in July, and we sold the gym in September and moved back to Florida in October. And we moved back to South Florida. Her, my kid's mom and I met at that Gold's Gym that I first started working out at in the early 90s. And then we moved back there. And then I ended up moving up here, North Florida, mainly because of the school systems and then the and then the military, because I was in the National Guard, and there's a lot more opportunity with the National Guard up here in Northeast Florida than there is any other place in Florida, because the headquarters are here in St. Augustine. Regional Training Institute out of Camp Landing. So it's we ended up in this part of Florida.
Wait, is the Gold Gym still? I'm from South Florida, so I'm trying to kind of pinpoint where. I'm pretty sure I saw a Gold Gym.
I know they have one here. It was like a Bailey's before, I think, or is that some kind of Gold? Maybe I don't know.
I don't know. I haven't seen any Golds. They used to. The Golds Gyms, World's Gyms, Powerhouses are kind of going by the wayside, you know, now. But Gold's Gym was the largest gym chain for.
I remember, because they had like all the equipment and stuff. Like they had like the, like people that buy like the Gold's Gym, like the hand gloves.
They had their own apparel line and supplement line. Accessory line. And so it was, they had approaching, if not over, 500 affiliates, globally at one point in time. And then just with the onset of, the big boxes, the LA Fitnesses.
Yeah, the Bailey's.
And then, Planet Fitnesses. And Bailey's, actually, when I had my Powerhouse gym, they were affiliated with Powerhouse.
Oh, really?
It was Bailey's Powerhouse Gyms.
Yeah.
And I met those guys, Dave and Don, back in the in the 90s,
I heard their gym kind of started like out of the garage kind of thing too.
It did.
I feel like that's like the best way to start. Like, you kind of like bring something up. Like, I know personally I can't do like LA Fitness and stuff. I'll go if I have to, but like just like the way we train, like with bodybuilding products and stuff. So you show up to like LA Fitness and I just get pissed off watching some people do stuff. I'm like, dude, why you been doing kickbacks for 45 minutes? Like, what are you trying to do? So it just gets me mentally mad. But like, I don't know. I like what you're doing with the, I love the grit of the pit. That's exactly like why it attracts the people it attracts. Because I mean, if you're going to go to the pit, like, I feel like you have to have that grit in you. Like, I haven't seen one soft person in there.
There's been a few.
But they get out. They get out real quick.
Most of them don't. Most
of them, they'll walk in, and they walk in on the wrong day, and they see like walk in like with Blake's lifting or something. They walk in like on us lifting, or we walk in even like on the bodybuilders that show up at certain times. It's like you kind of weed your way out. Like you figure out if you belong within the first week exactly. That's how I was when I showed up. Cause I showed up on a Saturday. And Saturday is like, if you guys don't know, Saturday is like the pit's like popping off because everybody's off work.
That was back then too. Like with the Saturday, it was actually like really like everybody was there too, you know?
Yeah, like you show up at like 11 o'clock and it's just like you have heavy metal blasting and you just hear weight slamming as you're pulling into like the parking lot. Like it is, like you're down the street and you hear like someone deadlifting from down the street. Yeah. And it's like, okay, what am I getting into?
If you've never been there, it's kind of intimidating when you walk in the first time, you know?
And there are just some big goofballs.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've actually had I've had a couple people when we, early on, and or had appointments, scheduled for people to come in and, view the, tour the pit or what have you. And we did a lot of open houses on Saturday, Saturday mornings and Saturday afternoons. And there was a lot of people that didn't even make it through the door. Yeah. And they would, like you said, you hear the music playing and the weights clanging and banging. And they'd walk through the door and like look in and then just turn around and walk back out.
It made for some people, not made for others.
Yeah, and that's perfectly fine. So that was kind of the environment and that I wanted to create. So there's usually, you either walk into the pit and it's, you get usually one of two reactions, right?
Yeah.
It's either like, oh, hell no, where's the door? I'm out of here. Or it's like they walk in and they're like, oh, this is what I've been looking for.
No in between.
No.
Let me try it out for 2 days. It's not that.
So before we go on the pit too, I kind of want to ask you. So I know you guys are very big on Westside. Mm. Is this Westside based in Columbus? Is that where
they are? It is, yeah.
That makes sense now too. I've seen a lot of pictures of you guys on Westside, and Brooke. Yeah, what do you think about them?
I love Louie.
Yeah.
I mean, I met Louie in Let's see, we opened up our gym in 96. So 96 or 97 is when I first met Louis Simmons. And I met him through a college buddy of mine that he and I played football together in college. And after college, he actually moved to Florida. And while I was working at the Gold's Gyms, then I had actually opened up a personal training and nutrition business that was in different gyms. So yeah. We were in several Gold's Gyms, and then Bob, my buddy, ended up running those. He ended up running one of the locations for me. So then when we moved to Ohio to open up the Powerhouse Gym, he was my manager. He was my general manager. And pretty cool story, actually. I mean, Bob was... he was an offensive lineman in college. I was a linebacker, and Bob was, you know, much bigger, you know, than I was as an offensive lineman. But through college, I mean, I beat him in every lift. You know, squat, bench, clean and jerk, deadlift. We deadlifted a little bit, but mainly did clean and jerks.
Yeah.
And and I wasn't, you know, I was, you know. You know, Bob was, you know, maybe a mid 300, you know, bencher, you know, all low 500 squatter, you know, so nothing crazy, you know. And then we moved up to Ohio, and Bob had started getting into some, I had already competed all in bodybuilding then through the 90s. They were like early to mid part of the 90s, and then we moved up in 96. And so Bob had just started to do a couple powerlifting competitions, and he got invited to train at Westside. And long and the short of it was that Louis turned him into an elite freaking powerlifter. Sure. Man, yeah, you know, internationally ranked and crazy. I mean, just absolutely insane, man. You know, like, that is just absolutely nuts. So I met Louis through Bob back then, and so I always like going up there and, you know, getting a chance to, and he's just, you know, Louis just lays out the red carpet, you know, for you. So, or at least he always has with, you know, me or anybody that I've, you know, I've taken up there. And so, Brooke, after her senior year in high school, she won the state championships in, girls weightlifting.
Yeah.
And, her coach, super great guy. And, just a all around good human being, you know, and really knowledgeable as well too. He's like a Louis Simmons prodigy, you know. He follows all of his protocols and programmings and everything for programs for his student athletes.
Yep.
So I called Louis, and I hadn't talked to him for years. And I was trying to get him to come down and surprise him. I was going to take him into the kids' weight room and over at Clay High School, and I wanted to just walk in there with Louis, you know, in the middle of one of their sessions, and I thought that'd be really cool, and just surprise Coach Keller. And when I talked to Louis, he's like, I haven't traveled or flown for years. And so anyway, he said, "Buddy," he said, "if you can get him up here," he said, "I'll spend the weekend with him." And, you know,
that's awesome.
And so that's that's what we did. And it was pretty cool. It was a good weekend.
Yeah. Westside looks nice. I mean, it looks very like hardcore. I've heard stories about it, but
I mean, I just watch videos on YouTube, and they have a little throw up bucket.
It's a mess. Yeah. You know what I mean? There's just stuff everywhere, plates everywhere, dumbbells everywhere, you know, accessory straps and ropes and stuff everywhere, and all, you know, completely disheveled and dirty and dusty. But it's Westside, and then, you know, it's pretty cool. It's a cool place to go and experience if you, you know, at least one of those kind of bucket list type of things.
Definitely. I saw the documentary on Netflix, I think. Did you see it?
Mm-hmm.
The West Side versus the World?
Yes.
They kind of painted a very, like, vivid picture about it. Like, it was, like, very competitive. People wanted to hurt each other.
Yeah.
All this, like, crazy shit, too.
Yeah.
Was it really like that? give or take.
So, back in the day, I would say yes. You know, back then, like when they were showcasing those, like Vogelpohl and, you know, all those guys back then I would say that was all real,
like
very, very much, you know, spot on. I think it's kind of changed a little bit, you know, just
with the times.
Louis's kind of, he's branched out a lot more, you know, and now he's a businessman now, you know,
they do very well.
And rightfully so, you know. He's designed, you know, some pretty amazing pieces and equipment.
The reverse hyper?
Reverse hyper and that standing push press.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's him?
Yeah, that was his. And he's got some crazy other stuff, too, that he's got the, I don't even know what he calls it, but it's a static, you can do squats or basically like a Smith machine, but you press against it have to keep so much tension against it before it releases. You can adjust it to like your, you know, if you have like a specific sticking point, like bench press.
Yeah.
And so you're, you know, if it's wherever that's at, you can adjust it accordingly and you have to continually press, you know, push so much, you know, PSI, pounds per square inch, against it, and then eventually it'll go. Yeah.
So it's basically the advanced version of like a pin press. Basically.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's pretty cool. I mean, I have to look into that.
Yeah.
But like, since we're on like the business portion of, like, I know especially with opening up gyms, like the business portion.
I'm ready for this one.
Yeah.
Because
like for us, like that's the huge inspiration to us. Like me, I have my name, like, you know, my name Bam Bam. I want to open up Bam Bam Fitness. But like, the business portion of opening up a gym, how important is that, and how in depth do you have to go into business in order to be a successful gym owner?
It's definitely a lot more than we realize, too.
I feel like you can't just like be, oh, I lift weights, I want to open up a gym, boom, gym open. Like, there's a lot more to it.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. And I guess it kind of depends on, and I wouldn't want to speculate, but I would assume that you're not looking at open like something that would compete with LA Fitness or anything.
It's going to be more of like there's going to be some set locations and it's going to be like grit gyms. Like, you know, like they'll be, they have Muscle Beach.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be something like a Muscle Beach, but it'll be like a grit gym, but it won't be like at a beach. So they'll have like three or four locations around the U.S.
Outside?
Yeah.
Like outside training areas and stuff like that or not?
With some, but more like a warehouse type thing. Like, kind of like, somewhat like the pit, like the same kind of like thought process. Mm-hmm. Like, I want it to be a great gym, but also have stuff for like athletes. Because I played college baseball, so I also want to have like turf area for athletes and stuff like that. But have like three big locations, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I think the industry's evolved so much, you know, since I started in it in the, you know, really like late 80s and early 90s. And I think the critical component is to have a niche, you know, to be, you know, to be niche-y, you know what I mean? To try to be all things to all people, you know, is, you know, things then get like kind of lost in the minutia, you know, and of course, the size of the facility, the bigger the facility, the more amenities that you offer, the more cost and expense, you know, that's, you know, involved with, you know, everything, you know, from your rent and, you know, all your overhead, your utilities, staff, and what have you. So that's kind of what motivated me to do what I do, you know, or what, you know, what the pit is, you know, right now is just to provide a training environment for, you know, like-minded people, you know, that, you know, we be able to keep the cost, you know, to, you know, to a minimum with it being private and you have to have your own code, you know, to get in. I don't have to have somebody at the front desk, you know, all the time. And, now I've got good trainers yourself, and, you know,
thank you,
that are there and, you know, able to kind of keep an eye on things. You know?
Oh, he's blushing.
It means a lot.
But no, I mean, that's a big benefit to me, you know, to have people that, you know, take ownership and, you know, care about the facility and are going to be there and, you know, well, keep an eye on it, you know, when I'm not there. And,
definitely.
So that's huge. But yeah, the, you know, biggest thing is, you know, one of your largest expenses, your two largest expenses, typically in this industry are going to be rent and payroll, I really eliminated the payroll component of it, just based off of the design of and business.
That's smart, though.
Yeah, the way that the business is organized, and able to do it, based on how we do it. And depending on what kind of facility you're going to have, you may or may not be able to do that. The big box, locations like the LA Fitnesses and all the Y, some of the YMCAs are ridiculous, and those are, public, they're privately funded, you can't compete with, those are nonprofits, and, so to try to make money in the industry, trying to compete with that is incredibly difficult. You got to have really, really deep pockets to do that. But, nothing really, significantly different, than any other type of business. I had a mortgage business for a number of years, and I had a business where I was basically brokered commercial fitness equipment as well too. And so same methodology with any type of business, keep your expenses low and try to minimize your expenses and generate as much revenue as as possible. And I think in the fitness industry, the trying to be somewhat more specialized than trying to kind of be all things to all people. And the discouraging thing in the fitness industry has been that, and it still is the same today, is that traditionally it's been, capitalizing on the fact that people will buy a fitness membership or a gym membership and not use it.
That's
literally the model that Planet Fitness uses.
It's so cheap.
It's $10 a month. And kind of digress a little bit, but there was a guy by the name of Rick Burke back in the 90s, I think, is when I first met Rick. And he had a World's Gym, and then he converted the World's Gym into a Planet Fitness. And he came up with the Planet Fitness name. That was before Planet Fitness existed.
Yeah.
And same color scheme that they use now, the purple and the yellow and the black. And that's what he did all of his equipment in. And so anyway, he had that for years, and then he ended up having a couple locations. They were all in South Florida. And I think he had more than one location, but ended up selling the name to Planet Fitness. And then Planet Fitness, decades later is what it is. But their whole model is based off of the fact that make the cost of entry as affordable as possible, keep the monthly payments ridiculously low so a person's not going to cancel, and then I'll basically penalize them if they do cancel, so at one point in time, there was, they would basically, waive any type of initiation fee, but then they would all back end a cancellation fee. No. So you could, you could join for no money down, $9.99 a month, $10 a month. But if you ever wanted to cancel, you had to pay $150 cancellation fee.
Yeah.
So at $10 a month, you're paying up front for 15 months.
Yeah.
The methodology there is going, oh, geez, if I use the gym one time in the next 15 months, I'm better off, just keeping it. So people just keep it.
That's smart, but it's also kind of
it is.
It's wow, that's super smart.
Very, it's like very smart, but it's like very like money hungry, I guess.
Sure, so, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
I guess that's like, kind of the industry is.
Wait, is Planet Fitness the same? Is that the place that has the Lunk Alarm?
Yeah.
Dude, I would love to just show up with some of the people from the pit and try to set up the Lunk Alarm. Like, quick as possible. Like, just call up, like, Blake and Jake and stuff, and, like, Gary walk in there and try to set up the Lunk Alarm.
We should take a field trip someday.
Listen, I'm 100% up for that. I feel like we get kicked out before we even walk.
Oh, yeah.
They see our group walking and be like, nope, get out.
They see Blake first, but nah.
Everybody with their gym bags.
And the gallon of water and stuff. They don't let you have gallons of water. No.
They have like a picture of a lump, whatever. And it's really a guy in a tank top with a gallon of water with a snapback on.
It's a picture of Blake.
Yeah, it's a picture of Blake.
It's a picture of Blake walking into the tent. Our 90% of our other members.
Exactly.
Jake walks in with his bar and sunglasses. Hey, guys. That would be fun. That would be a great video, not gonna lie.
It would be. That'd actually be a great promotional video for the
pit. That would be actually really good. Yeah.
Hey, you guys heard it here first. If you guys see it, you guys heard it here first.
New Year's 2021, the actual pit promotion. Us getting kicked out of Planet Fitness. Sounds good to me.
You know what?
It's funny. I'd actually put up on the Instagram page a while back we have a banner, in the gym, in the pit, that has the pit rules on it, and Planet Fitness has the same thing, and I put it like a side-by-side, and it's pretty funny.
Complete opposites.
Yeah.
So one of the things I know Brandon's talking about, kind of like everybody kind of aspires to open a gym to, I think everybody who's been in fitness and lifted weights always has wanted to open a gym, and you've done it. So one of the questions, what kind of struggles have you seen along the way personally, it's been about a year now?
Just almost exactly a year. We opened up our first day of taking memberships and workouts was December 16th, ago.
So about exactly a year.
So
what kind of struggles have you seen personally along the way?
Well, aside from, less than 90 days of opening, the pit, we went into a worldwide pandemic.
That's great.
So that was that was certainly an unforeseen challenge, and so really, I mean, I've yet to see and kind of surmise what impact that's had on us, it was early on, obviously, there were gyms that shut down, and we were fortunate that we were able to stay open, with being a private facility for a while.
It's a blessing.
Kind of stayed underneath the radar and didn't get the order, from the state to shut down like the commercial facilities did, and then some issues there. I think it was people that wanted to join and I didn't allow them to, during that time, that kind of push the envelope and get the authorities to step in, and I think we ended up shutting down for a week or something like that. But that was certainly an unforeseen, challenge that we had to contend with and deal with. And a lot of rolling the dice, any industry or business that you go into, and you try to do as much market research and as you can, but I'd say the biggest thing that if you can avoid to be if you can avoid being undercapitalized, I know a lot of people just throw it all in, I was talking to somebody here not too long ago that was talking about basically cashing in their entire life savings and their retirement and their 401k to to do exactly that, to open a gym. And I would highly encourage not doing that, it's not going to, it's just, there's other ways to go about doing it, and, with being able to, not completely ruin yourself, financially, as well too. So, whether it be, investors or loans, you can, worst case scenario, the business doesn't go, like you planned, and
you're still okay at the end.
Yeah. I mean, if you can, you still have your, you still have your livelihood, you have your own, personal savings or, retirement and what have you. So, but yeah, I mean, I guess, was it, Arnold Schwarzenegger cabbage the statement never have a plan B, you know.
Yeah. Basically, yeah.
You know, all makes in. Makes you second guess, you know, your plan A option, or have a backup or a fallback. If you don't, then you're
not go as hard on plan A,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. So
one of the cool things about the pit too, like I got there kind of late. I got there in March, but from that time on, I've seen it. Like the pit, it's been kind of cool to watch it grow along the way too. Cause I know back in the day, you guys didn't have like any power bars. You guys started a big building, equipment, water fountains. Like like watching that grow has been a really cool thing. Yeah. What kind of plans do you have for 2021 for the pit?
Well, and to kind of back up a little bit, when I initially opened the pit, you know, because I, you know, my roots were powerlifting, you know, and that's kind of like where I started, you know, with, you know, training for football and, you know, sports, and then, you know, did a few powerlifting meets, you know, early on before I got into bodybuilding and then competitive bodybuilding. But just because most of my contacts and what I had been doing and then gotten back into it after a long hiatus was bodybuilding, you know, I kind of actually envisioned, you know, being, you know, all 50-50, you know, bodybuilding, powerlifting, or, you know, maybe even more bodybuilding, you know, centric. And, you know, but I definitely wanted to attract, you know, the powerlifting community. It kind of just, you know, we've got more powerlifters than we do, you know, bodybuilders, you know. Yeah. And so I kind of really, you know, have, you know, change directions to a little, you know, to a degree, to be able to, you know, just really cater towards, you know, my membership base, you know. So, obviously, you know, we've got some pretty amazing, you know, bodybuilders that, you know, are in there as well too. But I mean, my God, I mean, from a powerlifting standpoint,
it's crazy.
I mean, I'd take a team from the pit. I mean, we've got 140 members, you know, and I think at last count we had, you know, almost 20 freaking guys that deadlift 700 pounds.
Yeah, it's crazy.
He's one of them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but it's crazy. I mean, what's that? 15%, you know, of our membership base, you know, deadlift 700 pounds. And I mean, that's just crazy. So, I mean, I'd put together a team of, you know, powerlifters from the pit, men and women probably.
Yeah.
I'll put them up against any other gym in the country, you know, or world, you know. It's
crazy.
Crazy.
Yeah.
We even talked about, like, amongst the powerlifters, like, we'll be talking with, like, Blake and Jake and stuff, and we're like, listen, like, in our...
They're all
like,
solid.
In all the powerlifters we have, the ones that actually compete, like, there's, like, Jake's on the USAPL, like, national team. You have Blake, who's ranked top, what?
He's up there.
Yeah, he's like up there. 10. And, like, I mean, I'm coming up. We have other people that are super strong. We're just sitting there talking. We're like, I mean, what other gym... Let's just start with Florida. What other gym in Florida beat the pit? Other than maybe...
The only one I'll say would be Perfect Storm because they have Dan Bell.
Yeah, but that's one person. Yeah. If we're going like person by person, like weight class by weight class,
yeah.
I mean, the pit has the most. I mean, it's plus weight classes too. I mean, we have people
everywhere.
People like in the 83. We have you in the 120. Me in the 105. We have Blake in 308. We have Jake. So it's like,
yeah,
it's so diverse and so many strong people attracted to one place just because the atmosphere we have.
Yeah,
the atmosphere at the pit is like you go in. Like, we talk, we joke around, whatever, but, like, we get our work done, we push each other. Like, I mean, I think when I showed up to the pit, I deadlifted barely 700. My bench was shit poor. I benched, like, 315 and squatted, like, 565. And I'm up to squatting 661, deadlifting close to 800 pounds and benching close to 400 pounds. Yeah. And it's just, like, that's just when people, like Garrett's in there telling me, like, hey, like, your bench sucks. Or Blake walking up to me after he just deadlifted something telling me to catch up. And it's just, like, just having that atmosphere and having those strong people around you. And having just, like, the access to lift whenever you need to, like, whenever you want. Like, 24/7 thing is a huge benefit for everybody. And it's just being able to have that. It's, like, I feel like that's the biggest thing that people benefit from at the pit, like just the atmosphere, the environment, and just the grit and the want to get better there.
Yeah. It's definitely a very unique vibe, you know, when you walk in.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, I feel it, you know. I mean, I, you know, other gyms. You know, I had a membership. I guess I won't call anybody out, but I mean, I had multiple memberships when before I opened the pit, and you know, getting training and getting ready for you know competitions and. You know, you go walk in and, you know, you're dragging ass, you know, and then, you know, then you got to deal with the nuances of, you know, your commercial gyms and, you know, people congregating on the, you know, on the machines and, you know, just texting and, you know, there's just none of that, you know, at the pit. So, I walk into the pit from, you know, well, working all day and, you know, an hour and a half commute from where I worked at, you know, to get to the pit. And I mean, I get jacked every time I walk in there. I think it's just the vibe and, you know, the people, you know, the like-minded people and, you know, they say iron sharpens iron and, you know, that's what it is.
100%.
I mean, you know, like yourself and, James LeBron. I mean, he's been there what just a couple months, and I mean, his totals have gone through the roof.
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
definitely.
I was talking to him about that the other day, and he said the same thing. You know, he says just you know, just everybody else around you, you know, continually getting better, and you know, you want to, you know, you want to keep up. You know, so.
Yeah.
Talk about a cool name. Like, I think, well, I mean, he's the same, what, he probably been older LeBron. Than LeBron.
I think, yeah, they're about the same age.
They're about, like, around the same age. But you know what? Your last name is LeBron. I'm going to name you James. Before LeBron James even there. So, James LeBron's the first LeBron James.
Yeah. nicer beard.
Nice, way nicer beard.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, Garrett, you'd said, you know, ask about the equipment and the plans, you know, for the future of the, of the pit. So, you know, like I said, I kind of, you know, look to you guys, you know, I mean, you guys are the experts.
That was awesome too. I mean, most like, I kind of cut you off, but most gyms wouldn't like, the owner wouldn't ask like the actual members that they wanted. They would just kind of get it, you know?
Yeah.
That's a huge change.
Yeah. And I mean, my wheelhouse is, you know, is bodybuilding, you know, it's not powerlifting, you know, so, I, you know, consider you guys the subject matter experts in that field. And, you know, you guys are who I rely on to, you know, figure out what we need and, you know, what's going to make the pit better. And so the bars, you know, I mean, when I opened up the, you know, I didn't know, you know, who I was going, you know, the membership base and, you know, who it was going to be and what federations they competed in. So, you know, I didn't want to, you know, I just didn't know, what the membership base was going to be. So, now, you know, we kind of, you know, we've got a really solid base of, you know, folks, and we know what federations they compete in and what bars, you know, they use. And, you know, we've got the monolift, but, you know, of course you can walk out with the monolift, but, you know, most of our competitors, when they're competing, are competing in a combo rack, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to a monolift. So, as a result of that, we've got a combo rack coming in.
That's awesome, yeah.
It's production's ahead of schedule, and I talked to Wes out at Texas Strength last week, and he said the combo rack was going to ship either the week of Christmas or the week afterwards. So should be 2-3 weeks away from getting the combo rack in, and I'm replacing the other, just the Olympic bench that we've got in there. Not the competition bench, but the Olympic bench.
Yeah.
I'm getting rid of that and getting another competition bench.
It'll be
just like the competition bench that we've got right now, but it won't have the face savers on it.
Yeah.
A couple more bars.
That's awesome.
We've gotten, and so I'm excited.
Yeah. I can see like a bunch of new people signing up once you get that equipment too. I
hope so.
Yeah.
We need some more people.
It's been slowly getting busier too. I don't know if it's just like the clients, people they've been bringing into, but just in the morning, because we're just like the morning time from like 9 to like 1 or 2. It used to be kind of slow. Now it seems a little more busy.
That is true. Yeah.
Like people I haven't seen before are signing up too.
Yeah. That's good.
I don't know. Nighttime's always super busy.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Nighttime's the time to go. Well, we go midday because we have stuff to do, but like, I feel like nighttime, like, you get all the older people that have like the 9-to-5 jobs and they show up after work, and that crowd is like insane. Like, if you want to hit a PR at the pit, you show up at like 6:30.
You're not gonna not miss.
You show up like because if you miss, like,
you can't come back.
Yeah, you can't. Literally, Blake used to tell me to my face, like he would literally text me that, like, hey, like, what number do you want to give him? I want to hit this. All right, well, if you can't hit that, see you at LA Fitness, bud. Yeah. All right, well, I got to do it now.
I can't wait to eventually get Blake on the podcast and hear him talk about his thoughts and stuff, too.
We're going to need a bigger table to get Blake on the podcast.
Yeah. We're going to need a wider screen, for sure.
So one of the cool things I want to talk about, too, because I know time, but because you've been in the industry for so long, what have you seen kind of change over the industry? Like, what have been some of the pros? What have been some of the cons? I guess in bodybuilding, powerlifting, just kind of everything.
Hmm.
Very broad question, but
yeah.
Some of the stuff you've seen.
The
woman thing was definitely a big one, too. I guess we kind of talked about it earlier.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. When, you know, it's crazy when you think about it. I mean,
definitely.
But that was, you know, really early on. Bodybuilding, one of the things, I guess powerlifting, the thing that that I've seen change to me that's most recognizable is the shift from equipped to non-equipped.
Yeah.
You know, because there was an era, you know, that where equipped lifting was kind of like king, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I'd say that pendulum has completely shifted, you know, now. And
it's like no wraps or anything. It's all like sleeves, basically.
Yeah, no, I mean, so, you know, belt and sleeves and wrist wraps, right? And so, yeah. But there was an era where it was all about, you know, bench shirts and suits and, the equipped aspect of the sport. So, so that's been kind of interesting, to see as well, too. To the point where, really, I think, you know, and understandably so, you know, the non-equipped lifters get a lot more respect than the equipped lifters, right? You know, so
yeah, sure, yeah.
And you just hear that in conversation, you know,
yeah.
If somebody talks about a number, you know, if it was, you know, typically squatted or benched,
yeah.
Even though the equipment helps in deadlift too, but you know, when people are talking about a number on squat or bench, you know, the follow up is you know, is that equipped or non equipped, and you know, so I think there's rightfully so, the person that's benching freaking 600 pounds, you know,
nothing.
Without a bench shirt on, a lot more impressive than somebody that's benching, you know, 600 or 700 pounds, you know, with
I hate Jake so much.
The standard has changed so much. You see people nowadays like squatting 9, pulling 9,
yeah,
no equipment. So now when you see people doing the same weight but equipment too, it kind of takes away a little bit.
Sure,
yeah,
sure. Well, and then when you can see when you look at the, you know, when you look at the numbers and the records, you know, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, you'll see a lot of non-equipped records exceeding the equipped records.
Yeah, that is true.
So I mean, there's an indication there that, you know, it's just not as popular, right? You know,
So
until you get to the, you know, elite level, like the Hoffs and the you know, Brian Carrolls and stuff like that. But even still, I mean, I don't know what's the most. I know Brian just, you know, set a world record in the squat for 13 something,
and
equipped. But
I think Big Ray hit, what was it, 1100? It was like,
Ray?
Yeah, and like that's in the USAPL, like the tested. He had over 1,000.
Yeah.
I think it was close to 1,100. Yeah.
I think it was like 1,090 something. And wasn't it sneeze?
Yeah.
Really? So almost.
Yeah, raw. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to the two.
That's a big
one. So almost 1,200 pounds.
Yeah.
Raw.
And our boy that we just had on the last podcast, too, he's 22, but he just squatted 909. Like, in the USAPL,
he's
crazy.
He's now he's number 11 all time, and he's the number one lifter 23 and under all time.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, we just had him on last podcast. He's from Big Boy. He goes to the gym, Texas Strength System.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Where all the Texas, he that's the gym he goes to. Okay.
That's where Combo Rex comes from.
That's the gym he attends because he's from Texas.
You know, the other thing about that you got to realize as well, too, is, you know, when in those federations, unlike the equipped, you're walking out with the weight on your back, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean,
that's a big factor.
You know, and that weight's shaky, too.
Yeah, you got to, you know, taking 1,000 pounds and you're, you know, taking a couple steps backwards, you know, with literally walking backwards with 1,000 pounds on your back. I mean,
that alone is going to take
a little bit out of you, you know, as opposed to because the guys that are doing equipped are, you know, I think all the equipped meets are using a monolift. Yeah. So they're not walking out with it. So.
And how much would you think the strength, because like you see like a lot of like older athletes and stuff, like, they look back and they're like, the generations now, like, how much strength has progressed.
Yeah.
Like, the numbers people are hitting now, how much do you think that's changed from back when you used to compete? Like, compared to, when did you compete in powerlifting? In the 80s?
Yeah.
So, the 80s versus people competing in 2020, how much are the numbers varying? Like, I would say, like, the difference.
Exponentially.
Yeah.
You know, I mean the numbers people are putting up now are just crazy, you know, compared to back then. I mean, there was a I'm gonna have a brain block here. What's the kid's name? I can think of him. He was a Polynesian guy. He did some stuff with Powerhouse Gym back in the day, but I think he was the first person to bench over 600 pounds.
Yeah.
And then he was the first teenager to do something ridiculous, to, I don't know, 500 pounds or something like that. But, you know, that was unheard of, you know, back then. You know, I mean, it was, you know, he was basically a superstar in the, you know, in the industry, in the iron game. Of his numbers. And, you know, I mean, he'd be one of many, you know, now. And so that's, you know, that's huge. It's interesting, though, because when you look at that compared to the evolution of bodybuilding, you know, and I was talking with a couple guys the other day, you know, there was the, you kind of see a disparity, you know, there with the strength athletes, where the strength numbers have gotten just unbelievably higher, you know. And if you look at the level of competition with bodybuilding, you know, with the, you know, the Olympia just occurring last weekend, which was really good, you know. It was it was really entertaining.
Big Grammy.
I enjoyed watching it. Yeah. But, you know, back in the 90s, you know, when it was you just had an incredible number of guys, you know, that were coming into every contest just in unbelievable shape. You know, I mean, you had, you know, Flex Wheeler, you know, Kevin Lebrone, you know, Nasser, you know, back then all, you know, fighting, you know, with Dorian, you know, and, you know, the depth, you know, Chris Cormier, you know, Dennis James, and, you know, all those guys, you know, were just, you know, all... Paul Bellette and Lee Priest, and, you know, any given lineup, you know, they were, you know, hell, some of the lineups were, you know, 10, 12, 14 deep, and you're like, good Lord, these guys, and they all were nailing it. They were all coming in shape, and, you know, and so now you kind of see, you know, it's kind of like, you know, there's the conditioning, I think, is the main thing that, you know, is not as consistent. You know, back then it was like every single, you know, the just absolute nailing it 100% from the conditioning standpoint was always, you know, 7-8 deep, you know, where now it's like, you know, there are 2 or 3, you know, guys that are that are nailing it. But
I had this conversation with I think it was Shane, but one of the big things I think in strength sports has been like the availability of new information. And it's so like easily readable. Like people can get, like, it's so easy to get new information, like strength training wise. I don't know how bodybuilding has changed over time, like information wise too. But anybody can go online, learn how to do better technique, programming. I think that's been a big thing. And then too, like social media too. You can now, like, there could have always been like strong people, but you might not have seen it as much as you do now, you know?
Yeah.
So much easier to see and get new information too.
Yeah.
I don't know how bodybuilding has such changed.
Yeah, no, I mean, that, but I can see that in the in the strength game for sure.
Yeah.
And the same, you know, same thing with bodybuilding. And I think more so maybe for, you know, I guess, you know, and, you know, bodybuilding is, you know, is such a small, you know, kind of subculture, you know, if you will. So I think the people that were, at the elite level, you know, back there, you know, they were getting the information, you know, firsthand. You know, they knew where to get it. And even like the up and coming, you know, amateurs were, you know, underneath the tutelage of somebody that really knew what they were doing. You know, I mean, like when I first started, I, you know, I was friends with a couple, you know, local pros, you know, and they kind of, you know, helped me, you know, get and guided me, you know, through my first couple competitions. And then I'd gotten into coaching, you know, clients, you know,
yeah.
After a couple years of competing myself. So, but yeah, the availability of information is just unlimited, you yeah. know, now. So pretty, certainly advantageous.
Yeah, but definitely.
The one thing I could never grasp about bodybuilding was nutrition. Like me, I've always wanted a six pack and I've tried everything. And then it's like it's, I get a little bit of showing, but like the nutrition part, I feel like it has to be so strict and so pinpoint in order to like get the results you get. So like, can you just kind of walk us through like, let's say you're prepping for a bodybuilding competition. What do you really look for as like a nutrition standpoint, a calorie deficit or like more protein or like,
I think I saw like, I don't know, before you go on too, I've seen watching like Arnold sub two.
Uh-huh.
I know he would eat like a, like 5 to 6 meals a day, big meal of steaks, mm-hmm. and just like train like 3 or 4 hours too. Is that kind of the like same height as now? Or is that just like Arnold or?
The frequency of the meals, yes.
Yeah.
You know, minimum, you know, 5 to, you know, somewhere between 5 and 7 meals, you yeah. know, is optimal. Honestly, 7 is optimal, you know, is better for most people. You know, 5 is doable, you know, depending on, you know, time frame and schedule.
Yeah.
So that's stayed, you know, fairly, you know, consistent over the years. The one thing about coaching athletes, bodybuilders is, I mean, it is really, and that's one of the things, you're talking about Big Ramy. This was his second prep with Chad Nichols, who yeah. is the coach that he used, and Rami's used multiple coaches, and it takes a while to figure out like what works for, you know, one particular person,
yeah.
you know. And then the crazy thing is what works for that person may work this year, but you may have to tweak things, you know, next year. It's really, really hit or miss, you know. So working, you know, figuring out what works best for, you know, each individual. And it is really, really individualized. I mean, I had, when I coached athletes, I had one guy that, he was a lightweight. He competed, top of the lightweight class is 154.25 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And he competed, we brought him in like right around 150, 152 pounds. And he was one of these guys, and he was taller for a lightweight and real stringy, you know, and but just, you know, lean, you know, all year round. And at the end of his diet, I just had to keep on feeding him because he was yeah. getting too lean and losing too much weight. And we ended up dieting him on 600 grams of carbohydrates.
Oh, sure.
Which is insane.
Yeah,
I mean, that's absolutely yeah. insane. And, I eat 250 in the off season, you know,
yeah.
so, like 250 dope. To 300 yeah. in the off season. And this guy's like, you know, 60 pounds less than, you know, I am. And he's eating 600, you know, you know, yeah. getting, right. leaning into a show. And then I've worked with another guy that was a heavyweight. And for the last 8 weeks, the guy ate nothing but egg whites and fish, you know, and vegetables, you know,
yeah.
for 8 weeks. Cause you know, that's what he had to do to, you know, nothing was working. You know, we couldn't get him lean.
Oh,
enough,
damn, that's miserable.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, it's incredibly, you know, individualized. But with that being said, it's always, you know, the level of, you know, discipline is always there regardless of what the quantity of foods look like. So it's, you know, it's measuring everything, you know, knowing, you know, making sure you're hitting exactly the certain, you know, number of macros, you know, grams of protein, carbohydrates, fats, and then just literally not deviating at all. Because it is so specific and individualized, it's got to be that regimented and detailed so you can make changes, right?
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, if yeah. it's, you know, if you don't know, you know, that, you know, you're eating, you know, if it's 250 grams of carbs and 300 grams of protein and, you know, 40 grams of fat, and, you know, and you're eating that exactly that and only that for, you know, 4 weeks or 5 weeks. And then you need to continually make changes, you know. Oh, you can drop, you know, your carbohydrate source by maybe 25 grams, and that can have a huge difference, you know. But if you're, you know, if you're not that consistent and that meticulous and that neurotic, you know, if you will, you won't be able to make, you know, small changes and, you know, see the benefits.
That's what I told all my clients too, is like, what's measured can improve, you know, but we don't know like what you're eating, like how you, like you're working out too. We don't know how to adjust, basically.
Right. Yeah. Same thing you're saying. Yeah. It's kind of the same thing as logging a workout now.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Your
weights you use all.
Yeah, exactly. If you go in and, you know, you're trying to pull a 3 rep max on, you know, deadlifts or whatever the, you know, case might be, or if you haven't got a history or a journal or a log of what you did the last time, mm-hmm. you know, how do you gauge, you know, your progress, you know, this time? So, same type of concept, you know.
So I would never have a six pack. I've been trying so hard.
A lot of sacrifice involved with regard to palatability and what a person likes to eat, that's for sure.
One thing I would ask you too, so who's your favorite bodybuilder now the Olympia has kind of passed too?
Oh, wow.
I don't know. Do you know
like
who
of all time or like?
Well, I guess both eras too. But I saw Chris Bumstead. I guess mm-hmm. he's a classic physique.
Yeah.
His was like, he was awesome to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was so Chris put on, he put on 6 pounds of muscle from last year's Olympia to this year's Olympia. Yeah. And I actually had last year, I had Breon winning it. You know, I thought Breon, especially from the back, I thought he destroyed Chris from the back. And, you know, if you just go through all the mandatory poses, you know, and kind of, you know, judge each one of those individually, I had Breon winning it last year. And this year, hands down, I had Chris, you know, taking it. So, you know, I think it was definitely justifiable this year, and I think he's going to be tough to beat, you know, because he's got. According to an interview I saw with him, what they measured him at, he's got 10 pounds in to go before he hits his classic weight class.
So, does bodybuilding go? I don't really know too much about bodybuilding. Does it go classic physique, go like a weight, and then after that, it's kind of open?
Yeah, so classic physique, they have, based on your height, you have a weight cap. And then open is just, you know, it's just open. You know,
anybody.
It doesn't matter what you know, how tall you are, or, you know, what you weigh. So, and actually the classic, inception of the classic division is what got me back into competing after taking 21 years off of competing. And I did my last show in 1996, and then my first show again in 2017.
Oh, shit.
A 21-year hiatus, and that's kind of another long story. But I got a call from a guy that I competed with years ago. I hadn't talked to him in, like, you know, over a decade and a half, and he kind of encouraged me to, you know, to... consider getting back into, you know, competing, and because he knew what weight class I, or, you know, what weight I'd competed at, and it was within that, you know, limit of what I would be allowed to weigh, you know, in classic. So kind of sparked my interest and ended up getting back into it as a result of that. But I think Bumstead will be continues to improve, and I think he'll hold that for a while. I was glad to see Rami win. You know, he's a real humble guy, and you know, real likable, and you know, just a good all around person with a good amount of humility. So it was nice to see him. He'll be a very gracious, you know, champion. And I think it was the first time that, you know, he really nailed it. You know, and he got his conditioning. He's always had the size, but I don't know. I mean, I guess a favorite bodybuilder. I'm a big Dorian fan. You know, Dorian Yates. I just I guess if I would, you know, I thought honestly, from a physique standpoint, I think, you know, Flex Wheeler was probably one of the most, you know, when he was on, you know, and he never won the Olympia, right? You know, but he had just just an amazing physique, you know, almost, you know, just picturesque, you know, I mean, as far as what a, you know, symmetrical bodybuilder, you know, should look like. But Dorian was just a mental machine, you know, yeah. That's what I respected a lot and enjoyed watching, you know, and listening to him, you know, him speak and the way that he went about doing everything. And he just, you know, would, you know, that's how we got the name The Shadow. You know, he would, you know, nobody would see him, you know, mm-hmm. until he stepped on the Olympia stage. And, you know, he would go back to the UK and, you know, go into the dungeon and, you know, just
do his
get to work. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. So I think that's going to wrap up the show just for time's sake, too.
Yeah.
So we can go on all day, too. But, we appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you guys having me.
It's
been fun.
Yeah. Do you want to shout out the Pit page, your Instagram page, if anybody wants to follow you? I'm sure it's only going to be people from the Pit that kind of watch this anyway, too. But any, like, new upcoming members, they can always watch this, kind of promote the Pit page, you know?
Yeah, sure. No, just the Instagram page, the Pit Gym, Jack's Beach, is the best way to kind of keep up on what's going on with us. And I try to highlight these guys and our members in the gym, and you know, when they are in their competitions and stuff. So yeah, that's definitely a good way to stay up with what we've got going on. And appreciate you guys having me.
Man. Yeah, awesome, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
I guess this is the outro. Yeah, cool. Perfect.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Sunday Sit Down.